Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to CAG Do, Kappa Area Guide Dog Users, Inc. The name of the show is About Your Dog and You. And the show that will answer what is a guide dog, who gets a guide dog, why they get a guide dog, when they get a guide dog, where they get a guide dog from, and how they get a guide dog. Our special guests will be answering some of these questions and also sharing some of their experience. This is CAG Do, About Your Dog and You, and it is brought to you by Kappa Area Guide Dog User, Inc. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and our guest host this last couple of months, and this month is from the City of Love, as they say, Philadelphia, is Miss Wendy Sherritt. And our host with the most is that will be our producer, our engineer, and our announcer behind the board is Miss Renee. Greetings, and how are you today, Miss Renee?
Rev, I am great. The Mid-Atlantic is getting ready for its third snowstorm. We haven't had any snow for 3 years, and now we are getting a lot of snow. So it's a football weekend, so we will be good if everybody's team wins.
Yeah, I see all those floating around football pools floating around. So that's going to be interesting. And it is, again, we just in the second week of year 2022, and just all what this year is going to hold. We're going into our third year of the COVID. That's, it's almost impossible to comprehend when people thought in 2020, when March, March the 13th, I remember on a Friday, when everything started closing down and stuff, people thought this was going to last like, a couple of months and everything. And here we are now, third year. So it seemed like a lifestyle change for not just the United States or your area, but the world. So this is going to be different. So anyway, give us our rundown for the day, Ms. Renee.
Well, of course, we start with Stop Dogging Us Around, the good, the bad, and the ugly of using a dog guide. And our guest host is Wendy Sherritt, and she'll be introducing herself shortly. And in our second half, we'll learn something new in Wendy's way, and she will introduce our guest, somebody special that she has gotten to come on today. So that's our show rundown, Rev.
All righty. So good afternoon, Miss Wendy, and how you doing up there in Philly?
Well, she can't hear you yet, but she's just starting. There she is.
Okay.
Okay, Rev, you got to ask that again because I didn't have her mic'd up.
Oh, sorry. All right, Miss Wendy, up there in Philly, how y'all folks doing?
Hey, us Philly are great. We are waiting for that wild card game that's going on Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock before the snowstorm. So, hey.
Yeah, well, I see you got your pom-poms already and everything.
Yeah, my nails are green. My pom-poms are out. My Eagles Super Bowl hat is on. I am ready.
All right. Okay. Oh, you team down. Okay. So we're going to do first segment and Stop Dogging Us Around, the good, the bad, the ugly of using a guide dog. And let me say, for me, it's always good using a guide dog because last week I experienced, was, as Mr. Nate said, snow been here for a couple of snowings. And one of the things with the paratransit, they will let you know, those who are using paratransit will tell you in the message saying that when you're making a trip, that because of the inclement weather, they cannot guarantee that they can get to you on time, or they can get up and give you door-to-door service. So last week when I had to go to work, that was the case. And this is the good thing about having the guide dog. The wind was blowing so that I could not hear the beep-beep on the Metro, which we have called Metro Access Bus, a van. And the weather was inclement, so they couldn't come up and get me. So by having a guide dog, thank you, Ms. Raven, that she was able to, you know, take me. I just gave her the command, and there's a Zoom command we use to target items and different things. And she just took me on to the to van, and I got on it because, believe me, that van operator did not look like he was interested in getting out and coming and getting me in that snow.
and the other thing is warm and cozy.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, if you don't show up, once your ride call you, the operator call you, a dispatch, if you don't show up in a certain amount of time, they will leave you. Okay, so you cannot fool around. So for me, that is the good of having the guide dog for me this week. The bad part is I worked on the staff of a county councilman, Mr. Calvin Hawkins, in Prince George County, Maryland, and I began a lot of phone calls again about Uber not picking up person with a guide dog. So this is the advice I give them. Call the American Council of the Blind .org. Go on see what they do on the website, and call the National Federation .org of the Blind, and because they do have some folks that's working on these situations where Uber do not pick up person with guide dogs, which they supposed to. Okay, so we have an agreement and understanding. So get in touch with the American Council of the Blind .org or NFB, National Federation of the Blind .org. All righty. Miss Wendy, anything happened with you this past week to reaffirm why you have a guide dog, good or bad?
Well, today I thought I had a hairdressing appointment. I harnessed up my dog, got myself gloves, hat, coat, everything, because it's cold out there. And I walked all the way 4 blocks to my hairdresser. And I get in the door and she says, "I tried to call you while you were walking here. I didn't get you before you left the house." And I know I walked around men that were working on the street with no questions. They had cones up, and Miss Bianca took me around all the cones, and they were jackhammering. Didn't even give it a thought. Walked past these men working, went into my beauty shop, and the girl said, "Well, they never informed us that our water was going to be off for the day." And we can't do your hair because we have no water. So it's like, okay, I'm going to be back another day. So she quick gave me a new date and time, and I walked back out. Now Miss Bianca gets down the sidewalk, and she's like, "Where are we going? Like, we just walked here. We didn't stay very long. Why are we walking right back?" But she did her job. She stuttered for a few steps and kind of like, "I don't understand, Mommy." And I kind of gave her a few nudges like, "I know. I can't explain, but we have to go home now."
Oh, boy.
So
I understand.
She kicked in the gear and just walked me back home. It was a nice, cool morning's walk.
All right.
But we haven't had the snow. It's going south of us. You guys keep getting the snow. I think even Sunday you're supposed to get more snow than we are,
which is okay
with me.
y'all supposed to have rain and slush and some of that kind of stuff and the winds. Now, what are the winds like up there? Are y'all getting a lot of windy stuff?
They've been whipping around. They've been whipping around. Yeah.
So I've
been staying in, I have to say. I haven't gone out too much since the holidays. This is the time of the year that I live here because I like my spring, my fall, and my summer. But the winter is I'm a bear. I hibernate.
I understand that. And this segment is sponsored by one of our long sponsors, been with us since we've been doing the show, which we've been doing this radio show, and that is Real Time Pain Relief. And Real Time Pain Relief is the best smelling, most effective real-time pain relief lotion in the world. You just rub it on, and the pain is gone. And believe me, if you have a guide dog, you need every now and then some pain relief to rub on your ankles, your knees, and if you're falling down, your elbows, and some other stuff. So we really appreciate real-time pain relief, especially when you go to get your first dog. You just have no idea. I was using muscles I didn't even know I had when I went to get my first dog. And all of us, you know, when we're young, and Wendy, you can share how did you feel when you got your first dog. But most of the people, when they get their first dog, they really feel that, you know, we get this information to say, do this, make sure you're in good shape, exercise. And you're thinking, oh, man, you know, I'm in very good shape. I ain't got to worry about that. But I'm telling you, when you get your first dog, you find out how good of a shape you in. And so, Wendy, when you got your first dog, how did you feel, or did you think you was up to the task? And all the, you know, the walking and all of that.
I was in my 30s, and I thought I was wonderful. I mean, I was doing karate. I exercised. I did tournaments. I worked out 3 nights a week. And I got there, and within 24, 48 hours of getting my first dog, I had, shin splints? Oh, my God. Up the back of my, and I'm like, I'm this big time karate person and my legs hurt because they walked as uphills and downhills and stepping up and down and walking for like 3 hours a day, just walking with your dog. And so, yeah, I got them, and they tell you, you're right. So the second time, I was lucky because my first dog, she retired the day before I went, so I was working her up until I actually went. And then I went through it again with my fourth dog because my third one collapsed and had to have surgery, and I didn't go for 3 months. So I had that downtime in between. But, yes, you do get your exercise. They feed you well, but you work it back off. yep.
Yeah.
And you eat every one of those meals, and then you go out and you work it back off.
yes, you do. Okay, so yeah. Miss Renee, we almost up to. So we get ready to go to a break, and when we come back from the break, Miss Wendy will introduce her special guest, and we will go from there. So Miss Renee will bump out and come back in on the other side.
All right. You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information we share is for dog guide users everywhere. Back over to our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and our guest host, Wendy Sherrod.
All right, Miss Wendy. So you want to introduce your guest?
Yes, today we have a very special guest, and I think this is the side of guide dogs that many users do not understand or even know about. Today we have Barbara Ann, and she is a 7-time puppy raiser, meaning she and her daughter have raised 7 seeing eye puppies that have gone on and become seeing eye guide dogs. So she's going to explain how she got involved, what it takes to be a puppy raiser, and I think the personal side of it is she's going to share as well, which I think most guide dog users need to understand that behind that guide dog they receive is actually a volunteer superhero that helps get their dog ready for their working life. So without any further ado, we have Barbara Ann, and she has graciously agreed to join us and share today.
Welcome, Ms. Barbara Ann.
Hello. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, yeah, good, good. I was worried about my connection.
no, you got a good
connection. Thank you for having me on today. Oh, good.
Well,
thank you
welcome.
So much for having me on today.
Oh, you're welcome. And if I had my record collection from the 60s, I would have hit the Beach Boys and you know. And I'm sure you heard that 1,000 of times, right?
No, I've never heard that before.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe you. Okay, so I guess you're younger than I thought then. Okay,
no,
yeah, the Beach
I'm just
Boys
kidding.
Have a very. Oh, okay.
I'm just kidding. Okay. I hear it all the time.
That I thought so. All right. Well, welcome, welcome. So go ahead and share with us. We look forward to it.
Well,
so
I was thinking maybe a little.
Tell
oh,
us
yeah,
about
go ahead.
How you got involved with raising your puppies.
Okay. Well, my daughter is adopted from China, and when we adopted her, we had 2 cats. Or 3 cats, actually. And when she was about 3, she said she wanted a dog. And I said, well, we would like a dog. I would like a dog, too. But we have to wait until the cats are older, and it's not fair to bring a dog in. So as the cats got older and were leaving us, we revisited getting a dog. And unfortunately, my husband said, oh, I don't know that I really want a dog. I think I'd like to stay with cats. They're so much easier. So my daughter and I were distraught. And on the way to church one Sunday morning, shortly after he told us he didn't want a dog, I was saying a prayer to let God open his heart to a dog. And when we got to church, our church does this, it's a fundraiser where you can buy gifts, Christmas gifts for people that are like chickens from, you know, from another country to feed people and Doctors Without Borders. And so we went downstairs and there was a collie sitting at the entrance to this. It's called the Alternative Gift Market. And my friend said to me, oh, look, your prayers are answered. There's a dog. You can take it home with you. And I laughed and I said, well, you know what? I'm really fussy. I don't want a collie. And so we started walking around, and there was a table that said the seeing eye, and there was a little black lab and a golden retriever puppy. And I ran over, and I'm like, can I hold that puppy? And and the woman said, hey, do you want to become a puppy raiser? And I said, it was the first time the seeing eye had ever been at our gift market, and I was just like, in shock that I saw a black lab because I grew up with black labs. And I was like, I don't even know what that means to be a puppy raiser. And so she gave me the information. My daughter and I went home and we said to my husband, guess what? We're going to become puppy raisers because you don't have the commitment of the whole dog, but you get the puppy and you get all these, you know, it was just win-win. Everything he said no to, we were like, well, if we're a puppy raiser, we can do that. So we agreed, and we decided to try it, and now we're on puppy number 7.
Wow.
So it's been an amazing experience, but that's how we got started. It was kind of just like an answer to a prayer. We were like, open our hearts to a puppy and our lives, and now we've got puppy after puppy after puppy.
Wow.
So have you raised different breeds of the puppies, or have you stayed with your fan favorite there of your lab?
Well, we've pretty much stayed with the labs. We have, as part of puppy raisers, we have to puppy sit other dogs for people to help them out, and we have puppy sat some German Shepherds. But our we really lean towards labs and lab golden mixes. So that's
okay.
That are the ones we've raised. And our first lab was a black lab, the ones I grew up with.
Oh, that must have been really... Have you had any with really unique names? Because us guide dog users can't wait to hear what the name of our dog's going to be. And I understand puppy raisers are sort of the same way.
Yes. Well, the most unique name we had was our second puppy was named Thelma. And we had a family friend who had died in January, and her name was Thelma. And we got our puppy Thelma in March. So, again, it was meant to be. It was like a sign because our friend was 90-some years old when she died, our Thelma. And then a couple months later, we had a Thelma delivered to us. So that was unique. And and nobody at the scene, I would have known that. You know, that was nothing they would have known. And then our Thelma actually went into the breeding program. And we got puppy from her first litter, and that puppy's name was a female, and her name was Buckwheat.
Buckwheat.
Yeah. She was a yellow lab named Buckwheat.
A black lab.
That was a unique name. She was a yellow lab named Buckwheat, that was a unique name. People used to stop us and say Buckwheat, so. But she knew her name, and she liked it. We called her Buck a lot, or Bucky, but yeah, Buckwheat was an unusual name for a female yellow lab.
Yeah.
Our current puppy's name is
Nectar.
Nectar.
Wow.
Like
that's different.
Nectar is a little different.
Nectar.
Too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought you had an F there. So for our audience, can you give just a very brief summary of the types of things that you volunteer to do when you're raising a puppy? Like what responsibilities do you have while raising a puppy?
Sure. So we get them at 7 weeks, and the breeding station is doing a good job. They seem to know their names, and they might know sit a little bit. But they're not housebroken or crate trained, so we have to work on housebreaking and crate training. And then we also have to work on the basic commands like sit, down, we use rest instead of stay, come and go to your place, which is a command to get them to go to their crate or their bed or something. And then our big responsibility, too, is teaching them nice house manners so that wherever they go, they're very well-behaved. We try to take them as many places as we can that we go to. So there are a few restrictions where we're not allowed to take them, but for the most part, we take them out shopping with us, like to Target runs and Walmart, and we take them to church and to school. I used to work in a school. I used to take them to school. We take them to, my daughter played a lot of sports, take them to all the practices and the sporting events, and take them to the movies. We take them just about everywhere we go, unless it's restricted by the CNI, they go with us.
That's wonderful. So you're really teaching them social skills to be in the human world, understand their kind of their role in the human world, which is very, very important. And we've
talked about that on previous shows, the difference between different service dog programs, that this is one of the key things that makes the Seeing Eye a really preferred program, is that our dogs are worked with prior to going in and learning how to guide a person, and they have really wonderful social skills, really, exactly. really important. So what you guys do is, you know, a trainer just would not have enough time to do that.
All
so when you're out with the dogs and teaching them and taking them around, how do you respond to them if they do something or that you don't want them to do, or how do you teach them to sit, come, and rest? What are the practices you use?
Well, to start with, they're exceptional dogs. So we've been very lucky. We've had very little, issues or disobedience with our puppies. We've been very fortunate. But the Seeing Eye asks, they wear a little bandana when they're babies or a vest identifying them as a working dog. And the Seeing Eye has asked us if they're acting up to take the vest or the bandana off and correct them so that, you know, they don't get associated with the Seeing Eye with bad behavior. But we really have not had to do that. But if they do, I've had a dog that was kind of whiny and didn't want to sit in church, and what I would do is I'd take her out into the hallway and do puppy push-ups. Are you guys familiar with puppy push-ups?
No.
What's that? So puppy push-ups are, we have them sit and then lay down, sit and lay down, like three or four times in a row, so that we get their attention and they understand they were doing something that we didn't want them to do. It's a correction, but not like a harsh correction. We do use verbal correction, like a strong no if they're doing something they're not supposed to do. And then we use a lot of verbal praise. Like even when I'm out in Target, I'm like, oh, you're such a good girl, keep coming with me, good girl, pay attention to me. You know, we give a lot of verbal praise when we're out. And our dogs have really responded to that.
And do I understand that you do not give them any treats when you're praising them or when they do a good task?
Correct, yes. We don't do any
right
treat
from
training.
The beginning.
It's all verbal. Right from
it's
the beginning,
all
yep, all verbal. Yep.
Verbal,
yep.
And
we get real high squeaky voices and... And encourage
and
them
that
with
is,
our voices.
Again, something that resonates to the guide dog user after they receive the dog from the school after it's been trained, is that, you know, we don't need to carry bags of treats around with us. All we need to do is to use, you know, our voices to tell,
right.
you know, show our dog that we appreciate what they've just done for us, or they're not being so good right now, and we give them a verbal command, you know, that shows them, you know, we're displeased with what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to change their actions.
It's interesting. My daughter started raising puppies when she was 8, and she's now 18. And we would be out, and we'd see people give their dogs treats, like to sit or to cut, you know. And my daughter would be like, oh, well, they don't need those treats for that. They can do that with, like, she would get very indignant, like, why are they giving them treats for a simple command? And I said, because, you know, we're training ours in a special way, and they have to learn about our voices. But she would get so funny thinking, like, they don't need a treat for that.
Wow. I have a question that a text from one of our listening audience. If what do you do when the puppy is afraid of something, say like lightning or there's loud noises or like a lawnmower or something like that? How do you all handle that during your training?
Yeah, go ahead, Wendy.
Well, I was going to say we're going to take a brief break here. because we need to, and we know that Reverend Ray needs to pay those bills down there at the radio station. And when we come back, we're going to be waiting for Barbara Ann's answer to your question, Reverend Ray.
All right, from our listening audience. Okay, we're bumping out, and we'll be bumping back in. Ms. Renee.
We want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV. That's the District, Maryland, and Virginia. So give them a call at 202-747-3434. That's 202-747-3434. And back over to our co-host and our special guest.
Okay, Barbara Ann, let's follow up and answer that audience question.
Yes. So when that happens, we try to distract the dog with, you know, with something pleasurable, maybe a special toy or sometimes just hugging them and petting them and rubbing their bellies and trying to then when we realize they're afraid of something, then we gradually reintroduce that in a very safe, you know, assured manner so that that they get used to it and they know that they're fine. I've not had dogs yet that are afraid of loud noises, but I have had some that don't want to walk on certain surfaces, and we never force them. We just, you know, gently encourage them, maybe get another dog to go ahead of them to see that it's safe, and just very gentle, reassuring, and lots of praise and lots of distraction and lots of, you know, good puppy voices.
Okay,
that's interesting to be able to have another dog, maybe a dog that's a hair older than your dog, show them the way where they're actually teaching each other,
mm-hmm.
Which leads into you actually do take your dogs as you're doing this program. You as a group, I know it's been a little changed right now due to our pandemic that's going on in our country. But prior to the pandemic, you actually work with a club, which is what they call it, a puppy club. And can you tell us a little bit about how that helps you? And I know there's monthly meetings, so can you give us a little bit of information that kind of extends your training and how the dogs can help each other by attending the club?
Yes, we meet once a month, and we at the meetings, the first thing we do is we call it a training circle. So we break the puppies up by age group, like we have babies, toddlers, and then like teenagers. And each group works with a puppy educator in our club, and they do things that are age appropriate for that dog. So the other thing I was thinking, sometimes in our training circle, we'll have somebody bring music or bring a leaf blower or something like that. So because they're in a group with other puppies, they are much more likely, if the other puppies aren't reacting, then they're not going to react either. So they follow those other puppies' leads. But each month we try to, in our meetings, incorporate what would be good for them to learn at their current age. You know, sometimes we do getting in and out of a car appropriately. Sometimes we have kids come over with big wheels and bikes and wagons and ride past them. Sometimes, you know, we work on doing steps. Indoor steps, outdoor steps, opening, going in and out of a door is very important for our puppy raisers to learn how to properly have the dog go in and out of doors. So we work on that depending, you know, on the age. Each month we work on something. And our club is very active. We try to do it even with, COVID's been hard, but we're getting back to it mostly doing outside events. But we try to do something each month as a club where we either go for a walk in a town or in a park. Sometimes we go to the mall and do a walk. We've been to, we took a tour of the Eagles Stadium.
I should have been there.
Sometimes we go to different factories that'll let us, come in and just kind of walk through so our dogs get used to different machinery, different smells, different environments. Sometimes we just take a train ride or a bus ride as a club, Again, the other dogs, some dogs don't like getting up the steps of the train, very scary, but if they see their puppy club friends getting on the train,
older
dogs don't mind, then they just follow them, and they get used to it.
So
we do a lot of events like that, not just, all by ourselves, but as a group as well.
That's interesting.
So the bigger question as we go through this year, I'm assuming you spend about a year with your puppy, you get them, and as you progress through the year, are there certain times, do they have testing through the year? Do they have to meet certain qualifications? Is that part of what you're trying to, do you have a checklist and my puppy needs to, how does that work with the program and the club?
So the CNI has a manual that kind of guides us in terms of exposure and what they'd like the dogs exposed to. And then what we do, at 6 months, they take a little test with our area coordinator to see if they're ready to be. So I should back up a little bit. When we get them, they're given a little bandana that identifies them as a CNI puppy. And from the day we start taking them out, we put that bandana on and we always say, okay, you're going to work now. You're working. Put the bandana on. Do whatever they do. And then when they get back in the car or are done, we take the bandana off and we make a big point of saying, oh, you're all done now. You did good job working. So then when they transition to the vest, they have to take a little test. And the test, do you want me to go through what the test is?
Just briefly.
The test is basic command. Yeah, it's basically like sit, come, down, rest, and greeting a stranger and not like jumping up or, keeping all their feet on the floor when they greet a stranger. The other thing they have to do is come and sit. And I don't know if you guys use that when you put the harness on, I think, so that they learn to come and sit by your side to get the harness put on. We do that.
Definitely.
And we do that test in a public space, like at a mall or in a place where there's distractions. So it's, so the area coordinator can see that puppy is really focusing on you. So, again, as part of our monthly meeting, we work on those commands, too, so that everybody knows what's going to be expected when they're 6 months old. So then they get their vest, and then they don't really get tested again until they go back to the seeing eye. But each at 6 months and at a year, the seeing eye sends us a report that it's pretty thorough that we have to fill out about behavioral report. Do they chase squirrels?
Okay.
Would they chase a deer? Are they afraid of cars? And so we fill that out at 6 months and at a year. And so that's a way of it. Plus, if we're having trouble in between, we have the club to call and, ask for guidance. And we also have this area coordinator who works for the CNI that if we have any behavioral issues or any questions, we call her immediately and she gets right on things and she'll come out to the house and help you if you need help with anything. So there's always, it's a huge resource of people to help guide you and guide your dog.
Wow, that's fantastic that you have all those. I mean, Seeing Eye has that network all built and you feel comfortable taking on this project, but you feel comfortable that you have the network behind you. I'm sure that in itself is you know, comforting, because it is a big and wonderful thing that you're doing for the organization as a whole, or for the blind person when they get their dog, you know, when they finally graduate the program. As you come up on the time that you've had with your dog, how is that? I mean, how do you get notified that your dog is prepared to go back and learn how to work as a guide dog? And can you talk about, like, the feelings? I can't imagine spending, you know, almost a year with a puppy and teaching it all those skills and then watching it go away. Like, I just, what is that like? And you've done it so many times again and again. So can you sort of give our audience a piece of your heart?
Basically, yeah, it's extremely emotional. We get a 3-week, we kind of get a feel for puppies in our club. They'll say, we make an announcement each month, like, oh, this one got called back, or this one, you know. And so you get a feel because you know how old your puppy is when your time is getting close. And then we do get a 3-week notice because the dogs have to go into quarantine before they go back to the CNI, meaning that they're not allowed to be around any other CNI dogs or around anything where they might pick up kennel cough or something they could take back to the kennel. So we get a 3-week notice, and then you just hold tight to that baby and try not to let them know that you're getting ready to do something big. And then the CNI, the coordinator, does come pick them up and take them back. And it's a very, for us, it's a very, very emotional day. We try to put on really brave faces so the puppy doesn't pick up that, you know, something is happening. And so far, all of our puppies have jumped in the van, wagging their tails, and can't wait to go. While we have them, they do get, I don't want to say passed around, but we are only allowed to leave them with people that are approved from the CNI. So, like, I'm taking my daughter back to college, so I'll call one of my friends from the club and say, hey, can you watch her? So our puppies do get used to going to other people, which helps them with the transition. So when they get called back to go in the van and they see the coordinator, they're like, ooh, I know her. She's my friend from puppy club, you know, like, and so they're happy to get in the van. Then the waterworks start for us. You know, we get really sad, but it's such a wonderful thing, and we wait with bated breath to hear. We get postcards every couple weeks, every couple months, that tells us how they're progressing with their training, and those are like gold. When they come in the mail, we get like so excited to see the progress of our little one that we just sent back.
So there's two other times you could receive information after you've given your precious one back to the seeing eye. There could be, if you will, I think we're coming up on another short break here, but if you could, after this next break, is to tell us, it's called a town walk. And then, you know, then after that, I think that the final one is when we students, the guide dog person, has been given the dog, we have the option of writing a very anonymous type letter to the person that raised the puppy, because there is no connection once you do this final walk. There is no connection between the visually impaired, the blind person, and the puppy raiser, so except for this one-time letter. So I think we're going to head into just another break here in a minute, and then we could sort of close up with that final chapter and how that works for you.
Okay.
Miss Renee, do we have a break here?
Absolutely. You are listening to CAGDU, about your dog and you. CAGDU is Capital Area Dog Guide Users, and we are located in the nation's capital. Back over to Wendy and our guest, Barbara Ann.
Well, I'm going to start before Barbara Ann finishes these final questions. Barbara Ann has been such an interesting guest. We have not done Wendy's Way today, but I am going to forego it because I really think this information is very important to our audience. And again, I said this in the beginning of the show, this is something that is rare to a lot of guide dog people. They do not have access. I must say I am extremely fortunate. I live in the Philadelphia area, and these puppy clubs are in all the counties around me because I'm much closer to the Seeing Eye facility. So I've had the honor, the privilege to have met most of these puppy raisers that I know Barbara Ann and I met at a Girl Scout function once. So I've really gotten to know many of them, and I have them on speed dial, and we just, you know, they're on my Facebook, and we get to share. So let's go into that, you know, Seeing Eye, and tell us what a town walk is and how important that is to you as a puppy raiser, and then what happens from there.
Okay. So once they're back at the Seeing Eye, the first month is pretty much observation and medical tests, and if they pass all of that, they get placed with a trainer, a professional trainer. The trainer works with them for about 4 months is the typical initial training. And about three and a half months in, so during that time, they're trained how to do, we don't do any of the professional training like traffic checks or, you know, special commands, but we just do the basic training. So then when they get with the trainer, they do all the, you know, the things they need to help keep you guys safe while they're guiding. So about 3.5 months in, they do what's called a blindfold test, where the trainer actually gets blindfolded and the dog, their supervisor stands behind them just so they're not in any danger. But the dog takes them on a blindfold walk through Morristown, New Jersey, and the dog has to stop traffic and avoid obstacles and do everything. If they pass their blindfold test, then they consider them ready for their town walk. Now, it's a little bit synonymous with a graduate. We kind of call it their graduation from puppy college. But the family that raised the puppy is invited to this town walk. It takes place in Morristown. We meet a actual guide. We are not allowed to have contact with our puppy, and they're not supposed to see us. So we meet in town with a guide, and the trainer brings our dog and starts in harness, you know, taking them on a walk around Morristown, New Jersey. And they try to get them to push out into traffic. They try to walk them into obstacles. They try to, like, we just had a town walk last Monday, and so there was ice. And so, oh, my goodness, our dog noticed ice on the right by the curb and stopped and walked her trainer around the ice. Well, my whole family burst into tears. We couldn't believe it. She
wow.
was so smart. But so what happens during the town walk is they don't want the dog to see us. We're not allowed to have any contact. So the guide keeps us back and will tell us, like, she's going to try to do a traffic stop here. She's going to push her out into oncoming traffic and see what the dog does. And so they do all that. The town walk takes about 40, 45 minutes. And they take them, we walk all over town. Again, we're far behind them. And then when the town walk is over, the guide who was helping us takes our dog back to the Sinai, so we don't have any contact with the dog, and then the trainer meets with us individually, goes over the different things the dog still needs to work on, or if the dog has been qualified as class ready, that she's ready when the next group of graduates come in to be placed, you know, with a blind person. Mm. So it's a very extremely emotional day because you just want to run over and hug your puppy and squeeze them, but you have to stay far away. And also you're so filled with pride of what these tiny little babies you got at 7 weeks are now capable of doing. It's the most amazing thing that we've ever experienced, and we've gone through it now 6 times.
Wow.
Wow. So you actually see your baby graduate and accomplish those tasks, those skills, and I'm sure their head's high, they're doing what they need to be doing, they're keeping that trainer safe, and you can only imagine what they then will be doing, you know, when they're paired up with a person, how they're going to be keeping that person safe day in and day out and working. I mean, that's your whole goal, is to get your dog to be able to work. Now, have all 6 of your dogs actually graduated and been paired up with a partner, or have you had any dogs that have had a career change during their time as a puppy?
Yes, we. So our first dog was matched with a blind person, and she's still with her. And our second one, Selma, went into the breeding program. She had 2 litters of puppies, and they felt that she was not, her temperament was not suited to breeding, and they actually took her out of the breeding program, trained her as a guide, and she is now working with a woman in Minnesota as a guide.
Oh.
So she had 2 litters and is a guide, which is very rare to be a breeder and a guide. So we're super proud of her. And then our third one is placed with a woman in upstate New York. And then our next one, she was released because she had some stubbornness. And they actually said she was a little too smart to be a guide because she thought things through too much and decided she didn't want to do them. So we adopted her back, and so she's a career change, and everybody loves her. She's a dream. Our next one is, she was released for a heart arrhythmia, very mild. It does not affect her in any way, except they didn't want to risk her being a guide with that. So we adopted her back as well. And then our Oriole, she's the one that just did her town walk, and they said she is class ready to go and be placed. So we're fingers crossed at the end of this month she'll get matched with somebody when they come in, because she is amazing. And then our new baby is only 4 months old.
Well, I have to say, after hearing that, I heard that you used it very easily, saying that 2 of them you adopted back. And I know that when a dog has a career change after the puppy program, the puppy raiser has the first option to adopt them. And I find that amazing, only because when we started this conversation, you said Dad didn't want a dog, and it sounds like you now have 2 dogs and the puppy you are raising. So Dad certainly...
And believe it or not, my husband told the trainer that Oriole is such a special dog. He was saying if she doesn't make it, we would take her back too.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
So God did change his heart. See?
See? It really, those puppies, and I mean, just look what they did for him and what they do then for the blind person. That is so telling of what these dogs do for us as blind individuals. So have you had the opportunity to hear from any of those individuals?
Unfortunately, the only one we've ever heard from is our first one. And we actually have seen them in person. Not the dog, the dog was not with them, but seen them in person. The CNI does a family day every year where they invite puppy raisers up, like for a picnic. And our first dog went to someone who is involved with the CNI. So we did get to meet them, and we do know all about her. Our other ones we haven't heard from. We write letters every once in a while, but I think, Wendy, you had said the correspondence we get is when our dogs are matched with a blind person, we do get a letter from the trainer. It's pretty specific to our dogs, but also basic, like just saying, oh, she's placed with a 65-year-old woman in upstate New York, and these will be her jobs, like, she's retired and she likes to go out to lunch or she likes to take the train in town or the bus. So we get an idea of what kind of work the puppy will be doing for their person. And they do give a little synopsis of, you know, how they bond it during the match process while they're at the CNI. But that's the final correspondence we get from the CNI unless the blind person reaches out to us.
Right. Well, Barbara Ann, I can't thank you enough for being on our show today and giving our audience the opportunity to really understand and appreciate the volunteer that's behind the puppies, you know, in this program. And so I'm going to turn it back over to Reverend Ray, but thank you for your time and your sharing this emotional roller coaster, if you will, with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yes.
Thank you for having me on.
Yes, thank you, Barbara Ann, very, very much. And I tell you, matter of fact, I just celebrated my 50th year of having guide dogs, and I'm on my number 7, so they sent me they send you a 50-year trophy, award or something, statue.
Wow.
And I just received my 50th-year statue of having a guide dog. And it has really, really changed my life. And I appreciate the puppy raisers like you all. And I have learned more about the restrictions in terms of, so the persons that receive your dog, can they still send you information or correspondence or just how the dog doing through the trainer or the puppy raiser leader or what?
So what they can do is I'm sorry. Are you there?
I'm here.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the person that receives our dog can send a letter to the seeing eye and ask them to forward it to us. We're not allowed to have direct contact. We also sometimes send letters to the CNI and say, please forward this to whoever has Selma from 2015, you know.
I guess.
And then they know what litter that is, and they know who the dog went to. So sometimes we send stuff, you know. When my daughter was younger, she used to write a letter, you know, about her feelings, you know, having the dog and after, and we would always send that through the CNI to the person.
But you just reminded me that I need to send a letter of appreciation for the person. It's been 2 years since we had our new dog, Wendy, and you just reminded me how important that is to the puppy raiser, so I'm going to make it a point to send some information on how Raven is doing that I just got. And I appreciate
that. We love those letters, and we pass them around our club. Because everybody in our club knows the dog, too. You know, we've all kind of helped raise that dog, too. And so when those letters come in, I mean, we just are a basket case at the club in tears, so happy
I'm going to put that on. I'm going to make that thing to do next week. I'm going to have one of my staff people do that so I can send it out. Well, thanks again, Barbara Ann, and we appreciate it all. And God bless you and Happy New Year to you. All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Miss Wendy. So that's another fine show, and we're going to wrap it up here. Anything you want to say before I close this out?
No, but I'd like our audience to know that next month we are going to have a perspective from a young man that is still in high school and doing the puppy raising. So we're going to hear from the younger person's point of view raising these puppies. So your audience should be ready and stay tuned for that, because I think that's going to be another fantastic show.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. So that's... So that is my Philadelphia Eagles co-host from Philly, Miss Wendy Sherrod. And so this is CAGDU, about your dog and you. And we thank our very special guest, Miss Barbara Ann of Puppy Raisers, working on the seventh puppy. And like I say, just reminded me to appreciate the puppy raiser that I have, my last dog, Miss Raven. And so this is Reverend Ray, and I'm also not just the host of this show, but the president of Capital Area Guide Dog Users, Inc. If you're interested in becoming a member, if you have a guide dog, or you want to be a volunteer, please go to our website, cagdu.org, and get the phone number, give me a call, get in touch with us. Because as you heard Ms. Barbara Ann say, if you're with a group of dogs, your dog can become well-behaved watching other well-behaved dogs. So I'm going to say thank you. Our time is up. We thank you for your time. And until the next time, this is Reverend Ray. And I like to say, I might not have sight, but I can have vision. And please do us a favor. You can hug your honey, but pet your pooch. God bless and be blessed.
You have been listening to CAGDU, about your dog and you, Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We're located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email is cagdu2020@gmail.com. That's C-A-G-D as in David, U2020@gmail.com. Or call us at 301-263-7371. See you next Friday.